What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drance. Drance covers the team for The Athletic as well. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step.
We are live. The Canucks playoff hopes?
True. Unlike the Canucks, we're live
not
from the Kintec
so
studio.
Much.
650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. As you said, yes, the Canucks playoff hopes, the faint playoff hopes, officially alive, officially dead. Officially, they're back! Officially extinguished.
Honestly, though, I wouldn't put it past the
Canucks team
to be like the
final loophole in the rules
or like the league's like, it turns out we were looking back with, you know, sport logic tracking, and this puck crossed the goal line. We're awarding the Canucks an extra 2 points.
They're still alive.
They're still kicking. Cause so
hold on.
Oh, you want to open the whiteboard?
Yeah. Well, for, I was
pay,
like,
pay the bills.
Batch is coming up at 1. And there's a lot to get. There's a lot of Canucks news, interesting quotes to dive into, a lot of stuff happening despite the team being eliminated from playoff contention.
And also, we just want to complain about stuff, too.
Live on
the airwaves.
Especially you. We got a lot to get into, so let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 10th. And we'll start with the headlines. And of course, the number one headline is that the Canucks are officially eliminated from playoff contention, despite the best efforts of local boy Macklin Celebrini doing everything he could to keep the season alive with a five-point game. Yeah.
Okay. First of all, Macklin Celebrini, you know what? You know why he looks so much more NHL ready than just about any other 18-year-old we've seen in years, including Bedard.
Big and built?
No, it's his speed. He the goal that where he briefly gave them a 4-3 lead before Joel Eriksson Ek tied it before the end of the second. He starts that play. He drives it through the neutral zone. He's up high at the point covering for a pinching D-man, and then he skates back down. Like, he legitimately covered 300 feet and won three or four 50-50 battles in addition to making a skilled puck handling play with speed through the neutral zone. He covers so much ground and he does it so quickly. I don't think people think of him as like an elite burner, but his skating is flat out like has played for 5 years in the NHL level. And that's something that takes a lot. Like, we talked about it a bit with Books in regards to Jonathan Lekkerimäki. Like, Jonathan Lekkerimäki is a really good skater and in time will be a really fast skater. He is not NHL fast now. Connor Bedard, not NHL fast right now. He's going to be a phenomenal skater. Macklin Celebrini, just unbelievable stuff. So the Canucks nearly got third period comebacks in consecutive nights to preserve their playoff hopes. That is hilarious.
Yeah.
That's just hilarious. Now, for those of our fans listening, or those Canucks fans listening, begrudgingly our fans.
Uh-huh. Can you be a fan of something you hate listen to?
Yes.
All right, good. We're in.
You're a hate fan.
You absolutely can.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Isn't Bill Simmons popular?
That's a good point.
Anyway, I understand that no matter what, like, there was fans that most fans, I think, in fact, just want to enjoy the idea of like be hopeful about their team, sort of support it without the usual cynicism and sarcasm that we associate with our program and certainly our listeners and online Canucks fans and the 650 Dunbar Lumber text inbox. But most fans, I think, are just generally hopeful, and Elimination Day sucks. And there's a certain dull finality to it.
Yes.
For the team, too. Like, I promise you, one of the benefits of that comeback in Dallas is you get one last fun charter flight from Dallas to Colorado. And it's like, we know the math, but could you imagine after that?
We're still in it.
You get one fun night with your teammates, one last joyful plane ride, which is a lot better than the performative anger plane ride. And that matters. And, you know, I'll always remember every year when I was working for Florida, Elimination Day was the worst day of the year for Roberto Luongo. You know, like, now, you know, he was in his late 30s, early 40s. He could hear the clock ticking. So the stakes were extremely high for a first ballot Hall of Fame guy who obviously had never gotten it done until he won one as a member of management last year. And just like how sullen he was every elimination day is something that'll just like always stick with me. Like no matter what, the day you're eliminated, no matter how obvious it's been for months, no matter how early it happens, the when that hits for an NHL locker room, for an NHL player, for people who are wired to be this competitive, like it hits hard. And so, you know, today does suck. Elimination day is the worst day of the year for fans and for a lot of Canucks players. I can promise you that.
Yeah, and there's some quotes, certainly, that we can get into from Quinn Hughes at some point in the show. Brock Besser, of course, as well. Patrick Alvin. Lots of interesting commentary. Some of it touching on just that, right? The disappointment of this moment. And especially for, you know, not just a team that was like, oh, hey, maybe we'll scrap for a playoff spot, but for a team that had designs on taking a step forward from going to the second round last year and did a lot of their planning in the offseason around that, right? You know, trading Tucker Poolman so you could create cap space throughout the course of the season with the hopes of adding an impact player at the deadline. It was very much that was the goal, and it just didn't materialize at all this year for a variety of reasons. And so you take stock. Canucks have made the playoffs twice in the last 10 seasons. Since the 2011 run, they've won two playoff series.
Well, and they've only made the playoffs in consecutive years, 2011, 2012,
mm-hmm.
across, what, I mean, that's a 13-year stretch now.
Yep.
And, you know, this is a team built on just get in and anything can happen. Like, this is an organization for whom the philosophy of ever taking your medicine, taking a calculated step back is anathema. Not the way they do business. In fact, often they discuss it as if it's shameful. And, you know, 16 of 32 make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
For some of that stretch, it was 16 to 30. The bar is not placed at excellence. It's placed at above average. And the Canucks haven't been able to consistently meet it, which is, you know, look, it's been disappointing in the past, but this was certainly the year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, even they make the bubble playoffs, but they lose Markstrom, Tanev, Toffoli, Stetcher in free agency. You know, I think there were some people who were trying to talk themselves in the Canucks having the best top four after the Nate Schmidt trade and on, but it was like a pretty thin bet, and we all kind of knew it. Plus, it was a 56-game season. You know, the team not repeating after the Willie Desjardins year, I think we all knew after that playoff series what we were in for.
That was not a big surprise. Yeah.
No. And but this is actually the one that's most different in a lot of ways.
Like, oh, absolutely.
This team, you know, actually played really good hockey last year. Like, this team actually had the feel of a team with enough young talent and enough structural integrity and good enough underlying performance and on, where you thought surely now they'll be able to sustain some measure of above average. And, you know, to have not been able to pull that off, it is an indictment. It really sucks to be the short-term, let's make the playoffs organization that doesn't make the playoffs. That's tough.
Not a great position to be in. And it's been a long time of that. It's been a long time now where that has been the standard for the Canucks.
There's no guarantee with a rebuild, though.
That's true.
You never know how long it could take.
So that's where things stand now. They are officially out of it. And as we said, twice in the playoffs in the last 10 seasons, two playoff series wins since the 2011 run to the Stanley Cup. The other headline, and this broke just this morning, and again, as I mentioned, there's a lot of interesting quotes coming out from the Canucks now, all courtesy of our colleague Ian McIntyre.
I'm very curious to know how you prioritize this.
Oh, I think I'm going to leave with Besser.
Okay.
That's the newsiest thing, and it's the one that just happened like an hour ago.
It's the most unique.
Yes.
As well.
So Ian McIntyre doing kind of a big multifaceted and the season is over piece up at sportsnet.ca that, as I said, came out earlier this morning. And part of it, he talks to Brock Besser specifically about Brock Besser's future with the Vancouver Canucks. Of course, as we all know, pending unrestricted free agent. Here's the quote from iMac. Besser said before the Dallas game on Tuesday that he does not expect to remain with the Canucks. Honestly, it's unlikely at this point, he told us. It sucks. It's unfortunate. I'm just trying to play good hockey, and then I'll worry about everything after that. We all know it's been a roller coaster of a year. There's been a lot of different things. And he also, which I think is funny, says, after struggling for long stretches of the season amid the distractions, Besser said he won't even talk to Ben Hagenson, his agent, again, until after the season. He says, yeah, I'm refusing to talk to Hank right now. So, which is interesting because it's very much unlikely that I'm coming back, but also I'm not really thinking about that stuff right now. Like, he hasn't made a priority to figure out where he's going to be playing next year. You know what I mean? Because he's not talking to his agent about it. I think I find that interesting. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah. There's a lot going on in those quotes.
There's a lot going on. Here's the thing, man. Now, this is Brock Besser's first time as an unrestricted free agent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe he should be talking to Ben Hankinson more, or you know, some guys who, you know, share his agent, like Luke Shen, who've really been through the ringer, you know, in terms of being on the scrap heap, being a July 1 priority. I mean, that guy's, you know, seen it all. Very rare that you hear a player directly, and I wouldn't say he crossed the Canucks off.
No, because he didn't fully close the door. Said it's unlikely.
It's unlikely. But honestly, it's unlikely. And the honesty is a big modifier. It's like, are you going to come tonight? Honestly?
That's a good point.
It's unlikely. Do you think you're seeing me later?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
You are letting me down gently.
Yeah. If he'd been like, look, it's unlikely. We all know the business side is complicated. That's one thing.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's unlikely. That's a significant
modifier.
And then
it sucks. It's unfortunate.
Yeah. And here's what I'm saying. Very rare. What makes this quote jump off the page is that we rarely hear players knock any team, much less their current team's chances of landing them publicly and on record. Right. Because look, these guys, highly specialized, right? Effectively selling service agreements to one of 32 employers. Right? Not 200, there's 32 shows in town.
Mm-hmm.
32 guys can to suggest, like, hey, it's unlikely with that one removes like significant leverage. Like, it's very rare that we see players take that sort of step. Now, maybe it's an inexperience. Maybe it's, I think it's just an honest quote.
But I also wonder, as you say, it's rare for the player to take a team off the board. Well, how much of this, though, is Besser reacting to information he has that maybe the team's not interested, or the team's not interested at a number that would work for him? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it could be less him saying, I'm not, like, less him making the choice and more him reacting to the information he has from the team.
Right. I see what you're saying. And yeah, I mean, that's absolutely in play, but like, we know that there's a fundamental disagreement on valuation that predates the trade
term. Yeah. Term, especially.
I think on both.
Sure.
Honestly, I think there's, you know, I think the Canucks have a view of a player that is a complimentary top six guy, more in that like Tyler Toffoli mold. And I think Besser and his camp look at himself as a guy who's scored at a 30 goal per 82 game pace, scored 40 last year, is still, despite a down season, going to be the fourth highest scoring free agent who hits the market. And you know, some of the other guys like almost certainly aren't moving. Like, John Tavares is number one at 37 goals.
Mm-hmm.
He's not moving. So like, he's not moving his stuff. So one of the top scoring free agent wingers available, he has more goals than Nikolaj Ehlers.
Yep.
Right? He has, who's the other guy? Mitch Marner. He has as many goals as Mitch Marner. They're both at 25. Unless Marner scored last night, I forget. Yeah, 25. So now Marner's a 100-point player. I'm not saying Marner's not going to be more desirable, but once you get past Marner and Ehlers, you're going to be like, who's the best goal scorer?
If we need a goal scoring winger, who are we calling? Brock Besser.
Right. And well, and especially because even among the guys ahead of him, like, are you going to consider Ryan Donato on that Chicago Blackhawks team to be a better goal scorer than Brock Besser? Because you shouldn't.
No.
You certainly shouldn't. So, you know, he's going to be very well positioned and he should maximize his leverage. You don't get these opportunities. How long has Besser been around? This is his first kick at the can as an unrestricted free agent. He should make sure that he gets
drafted 10 years ago now, 2015.
From a Canucks perspective, I don't think this changes much. I think we knew what the score was in terms of Besser's departure being more likely than not. I still don't think this closes the door to the Canucks potentially trying again. And I think more than anything, what we need to keep front of mind and what the Canucks need to be really careful about is you cannot be pot committed or let the optics of how this has all turned out dictate your behavior with Besser or Suter or even Derek Forbert for that matter. Like, don't fall victim to the sunk cost fallacy.
No.
Don't feel like the pressure to extend them should go up because the market will criticize the moves more harshly as a result of what you didn't do at the trade deadline. Because the truth is that that works both ways. If you sign Besser and the deal looks big, and it's going to look big given this market, you're still going to get criticized roundly in this market for having misplayed your hand, lost leverage, waited beyond the deadline. Like that inaction at the deadline is already baked in here, right? And by the way, the result, the fact that they fell this far short, doesn't change the bet itself, right? This isn't about how it turned out. It's about the bet that they made in the first place, which was also a bad one. And we knew it was a bad one.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I think they kind of knew it was a bad one.
I don't think they were thrilled with it.
No.
Patrick Alvin didn't sound thrilled with it afterwards.
Heck no. So here we are. This club has to be scrupulous and clear-eyed in rebuilding this forward group. Maybe Suter and Besser are a part of it, though, as Besser says, honestly, it's unlikely
at this point.
But you cannot be in any way swayed by how this has played out and what the market will say if you can't get it done.
Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, not to dig back into the debate we were having with Dhaliwal yesterday on the crossover, but it's a similar point where you can't let, as you say, the fear of what the market is going to say. You can't change your valuation because you're scared of the consequences of letting this player walk. You have to stick to how you value this player ultimately. And the one last thing I'll say about this on Brock Besser is I think you and I have talked a lot about if this is to change, probably what's likely going to happen is Besser really sitting down, talking to his agent, talking to the important people in his life, and kind of just getting down to brass tacks and saying, you know what, actually, I love Vancouver, whatever, I don't like it, but I'll bend and I'll make it work and I'll stay here, right? Like that's the path to him staying here, is kind of him bending because he loves it in Vancouver and wants to stay. We're not at the time in the calendar where that would happen yet. We're still in the, as you said, the emotional low surrounding elimination day, all of that, the frustration. So we're not at the moment where things would change, but certainly whatever percentage chance you thought there was of Besser coming back, you got to downgrade that chance now, having heard that quote to IMAC. Honestly, it's unlikely at this point, he says, on his potential for returning to the Vancouver Canucks.
Honestly,
I'm being totally honest here. It's unlikely. The other thing, some of the other quotes, I want to save the Quinn Hughes stuff and his commentary about Rick Tocchet, but also just generally about where the team's going and his season and how difficult it's been, all of that. The other really newsy thing I would say was also from that same IMAC piece where he talked to Brock Besser, speaking to Patrick Alvin specifically about Rick Tocchet. And again, as we've heard every time Patrick Alvin has addressed this, nothing but the highest praise for Rick Tocchet, believes in him, wants him to be the coach here long term. And then IMAC asked the question, would the Canucks use their club option on Tocchet to force him to stay next season? Of course, you originally reported that they are more than willing to do that. Elliot Friedman reporting the same thing. Here's Alvin's response. I've got a lot of respect for Rick Tocchet, so we'll cross that path when we get to that point. But my intention is to negotiate term with him and have a coach here that wants to be here. We'll continue to talk about that. So I wouldn't say that's fully taking the using the option thing off the table or walking it back. But you can kind of see almost like a good cop, bad cop thing going on here. Not that Jim Rutherford came out publicly and said the other stuff, but you know what I mean? It's like, well, it's out there that we'd use the option, but publicly we're going to say, look, we don't really want to do that. Because of course that's not your first choice. Bringing the hammer down is not your first choice if you really like the other person in the business relationship you're in. Of course, no. They want to find a better way to do it and a way to get it done without drama.
Yeah, I think the context of this, these aren't dueling reports. This isn't a walk back or anything like this. The initial report from me and the subsequent one from Elliot Friedman both spelled out that the club's preference was to get a long-term extension done. I think it's more about a club that's keen to and willing to enforce their rights, both in terms of the negotiation and setting the terms of it, and also making it clear to, you know, everyone around the league that Rick Tocchet is the Canucks coach. He is not a UFA, and that's it. So I don't see these as like incongruous.
No.
The team's preference, of course, is going to be to negotiate a deal. I'd add this, Jamie. I do think, And I've got a new piece up at The Athletic just going over the Canucks offseason checklist here. But I do think I'll go quick.
Do we want to save this for later?
No, we can get into it more later, but I want to go quick with this. I do think on the Tocchet end, especially with this Besser context, especially with the context of how miserable this season has been, Quinn Hughes' heavy-hearted commentary to Ian McIntyre sort of adding to this sense too. Canucks need some quick, easy, drama-free victories going into the offseason, and they have a couple of really straightforward ones that they can make happen in extending Tocchet and projecting some stability in organizational leadership and getting Tom Valander done, no muss, no fuss, at the tail end of his BU season, which could end tonight with BU competing for a chance to play in the national championship against Penn State at 4 p.m. Pacific, by the way, if you're interested in watching.
A quick note in the broadsheet, Rick Dhaliwal reporting that both Quinn Hughes and Thatcher Demko not likely to play. In fact, he says Hughes has already declined an invitation from Team USA to play at the World Championships later on. No surprise here, given the injuries, the injury status of both of those players and just the incredible burden that Quinn Hughes has taken on the ice for the Canucks. But there is the report from Rick Dhaliwal. He also suggested Kevin Lankinen possibly could be another player who chooses the rest, especially because he did represent Finland at the Four Nations as well. So that could be another possibility.
Garland would be the one that I'd be most curious to see, I think. He was there last year.
You know who I was wondering about? And only because, like, three quarters of their roster is tied up in Florida and Dallas is Atu Ratu for the Finns.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no,
like,
that's a good
so
shout.
Many of their guys are playing for those two teams.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, yeah, he could totally be a candidate. Now, did they paper him down? So that's the problem.
He's
not
probably
over.
Going to. Yeah, that's a good point.
He'll be competing for the Calder Cup.
Lineup notes for tonight. They do play in Colorado tonight. So Quinn Hughes is going to play. We're not shutting him down. I mean, I think they started this trip with six healthy defensemen. I haven't seen anything about a call-up from Abbotsford.
Hopefully, if he's in, he plays 20 minutes.
Hopefully less.
You'd
like to get that down to 18 minutes or something.
But he's going to log a ton on the power play.
That's true. But,
yeah, I mean, don't play him much.
No.
But if you need to keep him in the lineup, you need to keep him in the lineup.
So we'll keep an eye on
not
that.
Not ideal, man.
Yeah, it's not great.
Also, no McKinnon.
No McKinnon for the Avalanche. And then the roster update I wanted to get to as well. Prospect Vilmer Ulriksson assigned to Abbotsford after his OHL season with Brampton came to an end. Of course, Ulriksson, the very large forward, drafted in 2023, I believe. So he'll get a chance to go, maybe suit up for Abbotsford. We'll see if he'll get a chance to be a part of it or at least just around the team while they make their push to the Calder Cup playoffs.
Strong campaign, like he had a strong training camp, obviously earned the entry level contract coming out of it, only was able to play in 43 games in the OHL and in this his draft plus two, but you know, decent 35 points, probably not enough, still a lot of development that guy's gonna have to go through to even sort of be on the fringe, although you know, Tocchet and the organization are enamored with his size.
Playoff standings update, of course, not as much to get into in this department as there was earlier in the season. The one thing I'll note, really, what we're monitoring, as I said yesterday, is where the Canucks finish between them, Calgary, and Utah for draft positioning. Utah is 1 point behind the Canucks with the same number of games played. They host Nashville tonight while the Canucks play Colorado. So there you go. There's what we're watching now for the final four games.
Yeah, and Montreal now is one win away from clinching, from effectively eliminating all the teams behind them, especially as a result of that New York Rangers loss to the Philadelphia Flyers yesterday. And then the Calgary Flames. So the Minnesota Wild surviving, right? Also obviously dinged the Calgary Flames, although the Blues lost with 12 seconds left or 21 seconds left against the Oilers. So Calgary's kind of...
The Blues are finally slipping.
Calgary has two games in hand and is 5 points back.
They do. They have two games in hand on the Blues. So the Blues are not home free. But that
could
loss,
you imagine after all of this, though, if the Blues...
If Calgary catches the Blues.
If the Blues fall out.
That would be wild.
Could you imagine? Like, their next two games aren't easy, too.
Like, what are they?
Well, they're pretty easy.
What are they? Tell me.
Kraken in Utah.
Okay, that is pretty easy.
They're going to be fine. But could you imagine?
Could you imagine? Yeah, you never know. Has Utah let another goalie start yet, or are they still running Vemelka?
No, they're still
oh boy,
doing their best to murder Vemelka.
All right, give us a quick betting update there.
Sure. You know, What do we want to bet on here, bud?
I don't know. You got anything in the NBA tonight?
Well, I guess I've got the game lines.
Yeah, there you go.
The Canucks plus 180 to beat the Colorado Avalanche for a third time this season. Over under set in 5.5.
I like the over.
I don't know. These games
the way
are
the
all...
Canucks have been scoring. Have you seen 8-7 in Minnesota last night?
Yeah. You know what? This is silly season time of year. Actually, that's right. Right. Like this is like October where you just mash the overs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you're right.
There we go. All right. That's the whiteboard for today. We got a lot more to get into, including comments from Quinn Hughes on Rick Tocchet, comments from Patrick Alvin on Elias Pettersson, tons of stuff to dive into, the Canucks offseason to-do list. So get your text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line, and we will be back with more Canucks talk next on Sportsnet 650. Can you be a fan of something you hate listening to?
Yes.
All right. Good. We're in.
You're a hate fan.
America Undercover presents... The Player Haters Ball.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, real hate, man, that's like an art form, man. You know, it's like, you like a born a hater.